This is Digital Story Podcast number 726, February 18th, 2020. Today's theme is hands-on review of the Olympus OMD EM1 Mark III. I'm Derek Story. After spending 4 days in Costa Rica and continuing to shoot with the camera since then, I can comfortably say that I have a good feel for the Olympus EM1 Mark III. It is neither manna from heaven that many users hoped for, nor is it the disappointment that some reviewers have complained about. It's a solid semi-professional camera for nimble photography that's only limited by the user's imagination. I'll explain my views on today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. So I was lucky enough to be part of a review experience put on by Olympus that sent journalists from DP Review, Imaging Resource, Petapixel, Engadget, and so forth to Costa Rica to test the EM1 Mark III. Now, the only rule was that we didn't violate the embargo. In other words, we didn't talk about the camera before we were supposed to, which was really unfortunate timing for me because they lifted the embargo on Wednesday morning about 1 a.m. And, you know, the podcast publishes on Tuesday. So I just missed it by that much. But, you know, as it turned out, I'm kind of happy about that now, because we've all had a chance to look at the various reviews of the EM1 Mark III by the other folks on the bus. And now I get a chance to sort of talk about some of the issues that they brought up. So it all worked out, right? It all worked out. There was a moment on the bus when I was talking with a fellow journalist that I realized how the reviews were going to go for this camera. He was disappointed with the not updated sensor, as are many reviewers. The comparatively low resolution LCD is 1 million dots. The non-state-of-the-art electronic viewfinder, 2.36 million dots. The lackluster performance of AF tracking. And what they said was the relatively high price for a small sensor camera, which is $1,799. Those are some of the things that I was hearing on the bus, and I wasn't hearing a lot of discussion about the other aspects of the camera, of which there are many. So I'm going, okay. So my approach was, while I was there, I'm not an apologist for Olympus nor any other brand, so I didn't feel the need to defend the camera or defend them or really defend anything. But I did offer a few tips because I have experience with the EM1 Mark II, with the Pen F, with practically every Olympus camera in the mirrorless era. I just left it at that, offered my tips and left it at that. But I decided what I would do is lead off this review addressing those five comments. And again, there are things that we have seen in reviews published over the last week. Then we'll get on to the stuff that I like. So I guess the way, the mood that I'm in today is that as a kid, there were nights where I just ate the vegetables first, the soggy cauliflower, the stinky broccoli, you know, whatever it happened to be, just get it out of the way. And then I could really enjoy the mashed potatoes and hamburger. Okay, so that's what I'm going to do today. We're going to have some overcooked cauliflower first. Alrighty. Now, before I get into the specifics, I do want to make a general comment about Olympus, the Olympus mindset that I've learned over the years of working with them and their cameras. And what they do is, in my opinion, is they take a very holistic approach to the devices they build, and they will live and die by those choices. In other words, I never got the feeling that they were looking so much at the individual components, the sensor or the electronic viewfinder, whatever, in isolation. In other words, them saying we have to have, you know, the top of the line electronic viewfinder in our flagship camera. We have the top of the line LCD. We have to have, you know, a brand new sensor every time. I never got the impression from them that that's the way that they think. The way that I see them working is that they design the camera and they're looking at the whole camera. They're looking how everything works with each other in the camera and interacts with the system. And what they want to do is create an experience that I think is unique to what other manufacturers are making. I don't feel that they are individual component driven as much as they are experience driven. And I sort of sum up the Olympus approach to photography with what I call the three C's. Now, these are mine, not theirs. However, I will live and die by my three C's, just like they will by their cameras. And I think their design principles are driven by compact, creative, and capable. Those are the sort of words that I kind of hear here and there from them and that I get when I work with their devices. So keeping those three C's in mind, compact, creative, and capable, let's take a look at some of the complaints or the most common criticisms of the Mark III. At the top of the list is the non-updated 20.4 megapixel Live MOS Micro Four Thirds sensor. When Olympus debuted this sensor in September 2016, and that was in the EM1 Mark II, it scored the highest, according to DxOMark, of any four-thirds sensors, edging out the Panasonic competition and the 20.3 sensor that they had just launched in the Pen F earlier in the year. So it was the top-of-the-line four-thirds sensor in September 2016, when it came out. Now, that same 20.4 chip is in the EM1 Mark III. But the difference is that the Mark III has a TruePic 9 image processor compared to the TruePic 8 found in the EM1 Mark II. And in fact, even in the EM1X, they are TruePic 8 processors, but there's two of them. So there's a little horsepower there, right? But they are TruePic 8 and not 9. So at the moment, the Mark III is the only camera that has the TruePic 9 in it. By the way, the Pen F that launched earlier in 2016 has the TruePic 7 in there. Now, I can say that after shooting with all three cameras, my view is that it's the processor, not the sensor, that we should be focusing on with the Mark III. And I talked a little bit about this sort of stuff in last week's podcast. I mean, if you think about the evolution of smartphone cameras and where the real progress is made from, you know, iteration to iteration, a lot of that progress is in the computing power and the software, not so much the sensor itself. And I think that's where the upgrade is for the Mark III. Now, would I love a new sensor in the EM1, right? Yes, of course. I mean, we always would. I'm not going to say no to it. It's like saying, would I like $100, you know, slipped under my front door? Of course I would. I would take that. And when they do come out with a new sensor, which I know they will at some point, we'll all put on lampshades and run around the house with our arms waving in the air, of course. But at the moment, I don't think that this camera, the Mark III, should live and die by this 20 megapixel sensor that has been a proven good sensor. I think we should look, however, at the processor that's powering all these unique functions that this camera can do. So, you know, that's my take on the non-updated sensor. Yes, I would love to have a new sensor. I am not crestfallen because we don't. Next complaint, the 3-inch 1.037 million dot vari-angle touchscreen. I heard a little bit of carping about this. And, you know, I will agree that reviewing images on the EM1 Mark III is not quite as lovely as, let's say, the Sony A7R Mark IV that has a 3-inch 1.44 million dot rear LCD. Keep in mind a couple things. First of all, there is a substantial price difference between those two cameras. And there's a trick to really getting the most out of your Olympus LCD on the EM1 series that I think a lot of photographers don't realize. And that is, make sure that you start looking at your images at 1:1, because the default isn't 1:1. And the way that you set this up is that you go to gear D2, default setting, and then you choose equally value. Equally value means 1:1. So when you're looking at the LCD on the back of the camera, I think that's 7x. When you're looking through the electronic viewfinder, that's 5x. But if you're looking at the image 1:1, you can really judge its quality. You can judge its sharpness. You can judge the tonal quality. You can see all the stuff that you need to see, and it's quite nice. When you're looking at it at the other resolutions, especially the lesser resolutions, it doesn't look the same. And I think the sampling with the 1 million dot screen falls a little bit short. So yes, I would love to have an updated screen on. It's not a deal breaker for me, because I'm always looking at my images at 1:1 and it works quite well. Give it a try. And this works also on the EM1 Mark II if you have one of those right now. The third complaint is the 2.36 million dot electronic viewfinder on the Olympus. So again, let's compare it to the flagship Sony that has a 5.76 million dot resolution electronic viewfinder, a camera that I reviewed and loved. I think the Sony is a fantastic camera. But again, it costs a lot more. And part of that cost, I'm sure they put into that state-of-the-art electronic viewfinder. The way Olympus looks at this, and I actually did talk to a technical expert on this, is that they're really focusing on refresh rate, because they feel like that refresh rate is what provides the visual experience when you look through the electronic viewfinder. So the Sony is 120 frames per second refresh rate, and the Olympus electronic viewfinder is also 120 frames per second, with a lag time at a minuscule 0.005 second lag time. So it is very smooth display for both video and stills as you're moving around. And really what they wanted to focus on is a viewfinder that provide that very smooth viewing experience. So depending on your needs, depending on your preferences, if similar refresh rates and low latency get the job done for your photography, then the resolution might not be as big of an issue. This one's really up to you. The fourth one that I heard some people complain about and that you may have read about is the continuous AF plus tracking. Now, this is something where I agree with the complainers. I really do. And it's too bad, because this camera is a beast when it comes to autofocus. Every other aspect of the autofocus I absolutely love and think is fantastic. However, I think the AF plus tracking function is not up to par. I really don't. And I think, in my opinion, Olympus should just take it out. Don't even do it. You don't even need it. So just take it out. But there it is, and it is worth complaining about. So the way that I use it, the way that I use the continuous autofocus, and we were shooting a lot of birds in Costa Rica, is that I use continual autofocus, and they have these new groups in the EM1 Mark III, and one of the groups is called Group 9-Point Target Mode. And so it's a 3x3 sensor a point array that is just really just a great size for moving targets. It's not too big to where, you know, it would accidentally focus on something that it shouldn't, but it's big enough so that if you're following a bird or something, that you can keep that bird in focus. And it worked great for me. Now, we combine it with something that I'm surprised we haven't heard a lot more about it, which is there's a new joystick on the back of the camera that allows you to move the array regardless of which group you've chosen. You know, you could, whether you have the group 6-point or the group 9-point or there's all sorts of these different groups that you can choose from. You can even make a custom group that is like, wide and narrow, if that happens to be your scene. But you can move it around with this joystick that's on the back of the camera, and is fantastic. And of course, that joystick is not on the EM1 Mark II. I will tell you that I had my best success rate ever with moving objects, birds in the sky, in Costa Rica that I've ever had, ever, period. And a lot of it was because what I did was, and I got some help in setting up my camera, I used the group 9 point with continual autofocus, and then I used the jog whenever I needed to move that array around quickly, and it worked fantastic. So continuous AF plus tracking, I agree, it isn't up to par. The rest of the autofocusing is crazy insane good. And then finally, the fifth complaint, and I actually heard this, is that the $1,799 price tag is too much for a small sensor camera. And I'm going, wow, really? So just to put things in perspective, this camera, the Mark III, is $200 cheaper than the Mark II that came out in 2016, $200 cheaper, and it has much more horsepower and many more features. So, I have no problem at all with the $1,800 price tag. I think after you shoot with the camera and you really, get a feel for what's going on here, I think most people will feel like it's worth the money. All right, so now with all of that out of the way, with that overcooked cauliflower out of the way, let's talk about some of the things that I really like about this camera, and there are many. I'll start with five of my favorites. The first one is Live ND. Live neutral density is just wonderful, and the way they write it is it results in blurred subject movement by compositing exposures to replicate the look of a single image taken at a slower shutter speed. Particularly suitable for photographing moving water, five modes are available: ND2, 4, 8, 16, and ND32 to vary how the movement is portrayed. This is cool. It debuted on the EM1X. I think everyone that has the X will tell you that this thing works great. It's wonderful. Before I tested the X, I go, this sounds fun, but how often would I use it? Oh my gosh, every time I'm around water, I use it. And it allows me to shoot the water many different ways with just a press of a button. It is fantastic. It looks great. It works wonderfully. It is truly one of those smart algorithms in computational photography that I'm happy to see coming to an interchangeable lens camera, and they did a great job with it. Another thing is handheld high-res shot. Like the tripod mode, it produces a 50-megapixel JPEG or RAW file by compositing sequentially recorded files into a single image. The handheld high-res shot mode differs from the tripod mode by recording 16 independent frames, as opposed to 8, and the slight movement caused by hand-holding provides the range of movement needed to produce the larger final image. It is absolutely brilliant the way that it works. That slight hand movement that you just can't help having is what actually makes it work. That's what they factored in to creating this algorithm, and it is fantastic. It works so well, and you come away with a 50 megapixel shot that looks great, and people were using it on animals even. Like, for instance, we used it on a crocodile because he was just like camped out there and he wasn't moving. So they would do 50 megapixel handheld high res and get these amazing shots without a tripod. I mean, they were leaning over the side of a boat using this on a crocodile, and it worked and it looked great. So, I mean, this is a wonderful function and is definitely one of my favorite features. Now, here's one that you don't hear a whole lot about, but I absolutely love it. And it is the 120 frames per second full HD video capture. I wish I had this on the EM1 Mark II, but it isn't there. I went back and looked and I go, did I just miss this on the Mark II? No, it's not there. Here's the way it works. You can capture full HD at 120 frames per second. And then you have the options to set playback at 60p, 50p, 30p, 25p, or 24p. So if you set it to 30p, for example, then you have this lovely slow motion video at 0.25 speed. And it looks great. You don't have any production headaches. You don't have to do anything. All you have to do is set the camera to 120 and then choose, you know, what you want the playback to be at. You set that all up ahead of time and then you just shoot your video. It looks great on the camera. It looks great on the computer. Oh, it's absolutely beautiful. And if you tune in to tomorrow's sound bites that, you know, I've been doing sound bites every Wednesday, I'm going to talk about one of my favorite uses for 120 frames per second video capture. And you want to listen to soundbite because not only will it apply to this camera, but it would also apply to, you know, shooting this mode on an iPhone and other cameras that can do it. So make sure you check that out tomorrow. It's really good. The other thing I want to mention is that because of the superior image stabilization in this camera, the handheld 4K video is absolutely great. It's absolutely great. It's full 4K video. You don't need to put it on a tripod. Because of the stabilization, it really looks wonderful. So these additional features on this camera, I don't shoot a ton of video, but I shot more video on the Costa Rica trip than I normally do because it was so easy and it looked so good. The fourth thing, this multi-selector, which a lot of people are fondly calling the autofocus joystick. Olympus officially calls it the multi-selector. So you have 121 cross-type sensors, and you have a wide variety of autofocusing patterns now on the Mark III. And then you now have this joystick on the back that's super easy to use, super comfortable, and it works really well. It's the final piece, right? It's the icing on the cake. So as I was saying, I really liked for Animals in Motion to shoot with the 3x3 group, the 9 focus point group, and then just use my thumb to move that group around any way that I want by using the multi-selector on the back of the camera. Oh man, it was so nice. It was so nice and it worked so well. This is such a nice addition to the camera. If you shoot action photography or if you shoot sports, then I think it's worth upgrading to the Mark III just for this one feature alone. I honestly do. Well, between that and the overall improvement to autofocus, it's just crazy. And it's enjoyable, and that's the thing that I really like it. And speaking of autofocus, I should mention that the Starry Sky AF really works. It really works. And that is the new autofocus algorithm for fully dedicated night photography. And you can even focus on a star with it handheld. So you can take star shots handheld. You don't even need to put it on the tripod. You have a couple different modes you can use it for. And you don't have to worry about having an infinity stop on your lens. You don't have to worry about the lens at all now, other than that it's a good lens and that it lets in as much light as possible. But you don't have to worry about focusing the lens because this, you just point it to the section of the sky you're interested in. It finds a couple bright stars. It runs the algorithm. It locks in on those stars. And then you do the exposure and they look fantastic. And you can even do it handheld. Can even do it handheld. So lots of auto-focusing joy in the Mark III. The fifth thing I want to mention is also something I'm not hearing enough about, I think, which is the improved supersonic wave filter. So what they did with the EM1 Mark III is they added a coating to the supersonic wave filter. This has evolved from the EM1X even to a new level. And it is totally designed to repel dust. So what they were trying to attack here is that they want you to be able to change your lenses when you're out in the field because they think that's crazy that photographers don't do that because they're afraid of sensor dust. So they wanted to design a system that attacked it. And by putting this coating on an already fantastic, I mean, they're the ones that developed the supersonic wave filter in the first place. But by now adding this coating that repels dust, it doesn't stick to it, in addition to having, you know, the ultra-fast vibrations that would move any dust that did get on there off, now you can feel comfortable swapping lenses in basically any conditions. I mean, I don't know if I'd do it in a sandstorm, but I don't know if I'd be doing anything in a sandstorm without a lot of protection. But I mean, just in everyday life, like when we're in the jungle, when we're at the beach, when we're in the mountains, I never thought twice about having to change lenses, and that's because of this. And I think it should get more discussion because it is really cool and it works very well. Now, if I had to pick just one thing that really impresses me about the camera, it is the flexibility and the speed of the autofocusing. I'm not a bird photographer, and you know, I do take pictures of birds, but I haven't as much as I would like to because it hasn't been that enjoyable of an experience. This camera will change that for me, because after my testing in Costa Rica and how much I enjoyed taking pictures of bird and how high my success rate was, you know, I just have to say that this autofocusing is wonderful. And I'm talking about birds. I mean, if you talk about sports or, you know, much larger options like five-year-old kids running on a soccer field, then it gets even easier. So I just think that of all the things in this camera that really knocked my socks off, the autofocusing, both the flexibility, the speed, and the accuracy of it just really very much impressed me. You know, I should mention that I did not use a tripod once on the Costa Rica trip. Not once. And I brought one with me just in case, but I never carried it with me. I never used it. And I have long water shots with it. I shot stars, starry AF. I shot night shots. I did all sorts of stuff and never needed a tripod. My focal lengths were as long as 600 millimeters when I was in the jungle. This is worth something, right? I mean, when you don't have to carry a tripod, you can get by with just a couple lenses. I mean, I love the 40 to 150 Pro Zoom. I think it's one of the best lenses they make. I had a 1.4 and a 2x magnifier for them. Those teleconverters feel like, you know, natural lenses. In other words, I can't tell any difference in sharpness with the teleconverters on and off. So having that lens and then the 12 to 45 Pro Zoom, the new one that's out, and then I don't know, maybe a prime lens just for the heck of it. It's amazing. It's really amazing. It's such a light kit, but yet, you know, I have from 24 millimeters all the way up to, let me see, 600 millimeters with a kit that weighs very little. And I mean, I am just very impressed by that. Super impressed. And not having to carry a tripod was part of that joy. What else? Well, there's still a couple other things. I mean, there's many more things. I'm not going to get to them all in this show, but USB-C charging. So now you can do in-camera charging. You know, just plug the cable into it. I used it with a 10-watt Apple iPad charger and just plug the cable in and I can recharge the battery. So I just think that's really nice. And you just have the cable with you just in case you lose your charger, or if you only have one charger, you want to charge one battery and then charge in camera at the same time, you can do that. And you know, these are nice touches. Other nice touches, there's an anti-flicker setting now that detects the frequency of artificial lighting such as fluorescent light, and it activates the shutter at peak brightness to smooth out any exposure or color differences between the frames. Not a big deal, you say. Well, it is if you shoot indoor sports, right? If you're shooting basketball, then suddenly this small thing that doesn't get discussed becomes a big thing, and the EM1 Mark III has it. I haven't talked about, you know, what a great job that it does with the improved face and eye AF. They're really good, and they work really well. So you can use face and eye AF detection. It saves you a lot of time. It increases your accuracy rate. It works wonderfully. Of course, we know it has dual card slots already. This is a lot of camera. Now, I understand that the Olympus EM1 Mark III is not for everyone. I totally get that. It wasn't for a lot of people on the bus for various reasons. But I can tell you this, it certainly is for me. I absolutely love this camera. And as a nimble photographer, as a photographer who likes high quality, as a photographer who enjoys being creative, this camera just has all of that in there. It is competent. It is creative. It is compact. And I think it's a good value for the money. And after the trip to Costa Rica, where I was using it and using it for the first time at that, I have to say that my shots look incredible. I never got tired during those long days. They were very long days. And my bottom line is that it's a heck of a camera and a heck of a camera system. Two thumbs up. I highly recommend it for mirrorless shooters, micro four thirds shooters, travelers, nimble photographers, and people who shoot action. It is a wonderful camera. I'm running a little long today, but I do want to mention that also announced was the Olympus 12 to 45 millimeter F4 Pro Zoom. This is a lens I have been waiting for. It is super light. I mean, it weighs 8.96 ounces, 254 grams. It is 2.5 inches by 2.76 inches. It has 9 groups, 7 rounded aperture blades. It does 1-2 close-up focusing. You can get in really tight with this thing. F4 constant aperture and gives you a 35 millimeter equivalent of 24 to 90 millimeters. And the images look fabulous. They look absolutely great. This is definitely a pro lens. When we're talking about traveling light, this lens is right there. And on top of it, it's weather resistance. It's a gem. Just wanted to mention it because it is a wonderful complement to all of the Olympus cameras. You know, you just pick any of them. It looks great on the Pen-F, the EM5 Mark III, name it, the EM1. All of them, it works great. I'm really glad that they released this lens and they released it with this particular camera. All right, just a little Virtual Camera Club news. I want to give a big thanks, a shout out to our Inner Circle members. I hope you guys have been following. We've got some good stuff going on over at the Patreon site. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, of supporting this podcast and enjoying some of the benefits of being part of the Inner Circle, just go over to our Patreon site. There's a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. Go over there, nose around, and hopefully you will join this elite group of supporters that we have in our photography community. Also want to mention that we have affiliate links in the show notes for B&H in this particular show. Those links have code in them. If you click on them, you help support the site. And it doesn't cost you any more, but it does help us out. And I appreciate you stopping by the Digital Story before you shop at B&H or Amazon. Again, you know, this does add up over time. So big thanks to all of you who take that extra step. And finally, a huge thank you to our friends at Red River Paper. They're the ones that have supported this podcast's longest running sponsor ever, ever. Month in and month out, they're standing behind us. They have a wonderful site where you can find out everything you need to know about inkjet printing, all the way from the kind of paper you should use to the sort of projects that you might want to think about, to the kind of printers that might work best for your needs, to tutorials on how to use them, everything. You want ink? You can get it there too. I mean, it's nice having just one place where you can go to get everything that you need for inkjet printing. That is Red River Paper. They have a tile on all the pages of Digital Story, and they have a wonderful Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. Thank you so much for joining me. I have to tell you, I am very excited about the EM1 Mark III. I hope I helped you decide if it's the right camera for you or not. come back next week. I got more goodies ready to share with you. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye now.